This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
I've been listening to you for, I mean, how do you want to start here? Do you want a little background or?
There we go.
Jump right in?
We just did. There you go. How do you want to start? That's how we start. Mike, we'll go with Mike P. How do you say your last name? Do you want to say your last name?
It's Pianodosi. Like the, I don't know if you ever saw the bakery, the bread.
Oh,
Pianodosi
okay.
Bakery. It's not me. Okay. Otherwise, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't. But it's Pianodosi. I figure Mike P. Keep it simple.
Yep.
I'm in Salem, New Hampshire. Which
are you really?
Yeah. And I actually grew up in Somerville, Mass. And,
okay.
We've been up here for about 30 years now. You know, it's right near the highway. I work in Boston. I'm in the union construction.
Okay.
Since 1987, you know, doing the.
Did you work on the big
drywall finishing? Oh no, that was before I got in. I got in 87, and I think it was still going on, but
87.
1987.
Yeah, the big dig was in the 90s.
Yeah, so that was. I mean, I'm an interior. I finished drywall.
Okay. Oh, all right. Yeah.
So I'm always inside and.
Oh, nice.
You know, hey, it's been good. You know, good pension and all that. Good security that way. So.
Nice.
Met a lot of nice people along the way, and it's been good for the family, obviously. But.
Yeah. You had Let me see. You sent me some pictures. I didn't know you were even in the area.
In my
area, because you sent me pictures and I was the Bruin stuff and everything. And I was like, oh, maybe he's just a fan and he's living. I don't know where. I didn't know where you were. I didn't know you were that close. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been watching the Bruins since I was little, and always been a fan of the tough guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that one picture you sent was I didn't.
Well, that yes,
Dan Jonathan.
My son. Yeah, that fight. You've seen it obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just incredible what he did to that guy is so big and my God,
I feel like I saw that one. Live, not in person,
yeah, same
but
here.
On TV. I feel like I was watching it that night, and I was. I always loved Stan Jonathan as a kid, and growing up, my dad when we put the games on, my dad would put the games on, and I was like, I just loved. He was like a little wrecking ball.
And then
he would fight. I mean, just the way he skated around the ice, and then you ended up later on with like guys like Andy Brickley or Randy Burridge. Came later that were very much like him as well, not as good of fighters as he was.
Grinders.
And
right.
I just always, I always liked that. And it's like, it's funny when I got my first Bruins jersey, I almost got a number 17.
I heard the story. You actually designed your own, right?
Yeah, but the reason I didn't go with 17, I wanted 17 because of Stan Jonathan, but at the time. 17, who was wearing 17 was Nevin Marquardt.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't necessarily want a Nevin Marquardt jersey because when you went to the store, you had to buy whatever they had. I didn't have the money to get it custom made. And then when I decided to make my own, I went with Ray Bourque because he was at that time my favorite player playing. Stan Jonathan was just, what a wreck. What a wrecker.
Yeah.
Oh, he's fun.
And, so those pictures that I sent you, I actually had like six more pictures that for some reason didn't download
and didn't
go through. But, you know, just of the crap that I have around here, posters and collectibles and stuff like that, equipment. But, yeah. So congratulations on the upgrade.
Thank you.
I listened the other day Yeah, to you. Thank you. 3 hour podcast.
Did you listen to the whole thing?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. Well, that's the thing, you know. Like you've said many times, I mean, when I found your podcast, it was like so. You know, I was like, oh, there's really somebody out there that you know that has the passion for these little moments in the movies that you just, you know, want to hear over and over again. And, you know, I just stuck with you. And I actually sent, and luckily it didn't go through, but I, when you first started, you would do like just breakdown movies. It wasn't any interviews. You know what I mean? It wasn't as long, but you would do movies and I would look so forward to that every Friday.
Yeah. I'm getting back to that. I'm getting back to that. I promise.
I love what you're doing with the whole thing because it's growing. It's growing, and I just stay with it because I'm on board.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
But I tried to send you an email, and I must have got the address wrong because it was, hey DJ, you know, I really wish you would get back to breaking down movies because you had gone on. Like for a few weeks in a row doing interviews.
Yeah.
Even on Fridays, Tuesdays is Tuesdays, but. Yeah. And I said, I really wish you would get back to breaking down movies. I miss hearing all the timestamps and all this.
Yeah, yeah.
But luckily it didn't go through, and it wasn't like a criticism. It was just.
But that's how I feel, though. I do feel like a little bad because that is my foundation. That is what I love, and that's why. And it's not just like I feel bad for you, the listeners. I feel bad because that's why I founded it. There was nobody doing that. And I feel like if I don't get back to that in some form, that was my foundation. That was what I started as and why I started, right? But what happens is it was so difficult to just keep doing it and doing it. And that's why I kept adding other things. Cause I got to keep myself entertained. And like I said to Todd the other day, it's like, when you do break down a movie, it's like that takes you like all your other time from watching anything else is now focused into just watching one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's a lot of work involved. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kept trying to find different ways to streamline it. And when you do an entire movie, there's no real way to streamline it. And like, remember when I was talking to Ralph Potts and I was like, how long does it take you to break down a movie to review a movie? And he's like, oh, like a couple hours. I was like, are you kidding me? But he's just, he watches the movie and then it takes him like an hour, he said, or something to type out and write what he just, and I'm like, man. But I try to get into some real detail, so I really have to analyze. So I'm like,
yeah, you dig a little deeper, I think.
Yeah, and I'm glad there's people like you that enjoy that, because I would feel awful if I just kept doing. I do that anyways, but to actually sit down and record it, it takes time. So my hope is, because now I do, like you said, I have this show that it's John and I. I know I have a show going every week that takes a lot off me, because there is stress involved in, like, I really do want to produce something for people every single week, and it was stressful. I'm like, what do I do this week? What do I do? Well, how can I?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, just like everybody has in life, you're like, some days you just don't want to do anything. You just want to relax, you know, or go away, and you're like, but now I know. So that stress is gone. And now what I'm hoping is I'm going to start doing these shows, and they're going to get done way ahead of time. And then when I do want, I'm not under stress to get it done. I can do it at my own leisure, put it together, and then you guys will get it. And what I'm trying to do is stockpile up some and then be able to just drop them into the shows, kind of like what I did last week with a 3 hour podcast. So they are coming, I'm as disappointed as you guys are that they're not out there as much right now.
Well, it's not so much a disappointment. I mean, the other stuff you do is very interesting as well, and I'm on board for that stuff too. But you're still the only podcast that I know of that even does breakdown movies. I know the guy that's doing Base Hunters now. Yeah. It's a little more technical.
Yeah, he's doing bass scenes, but he's getting technical with it, and he's gonna. And I think him and I are going to have great conversations about that. I anticipate him coming back on the show a bunch when he does some scenes, because when he starts getting into some of those older scenes, and it's, I'm really kind of fascinated by that, because I don't really get into that, but it's going to be fun. Like I said with him the other day, is that it's going to be fun to say, like, wow, I really thought that was really low because I really enjoyed that scene. And then he's going to be like, well, no, it's actually this, this, and this. And it's like, oh, yeah. Cool.
Well, it's unfortunate that he can't, like, show a scene on YouTube or whatever because of the copyright issue. But
yeah, we're all inhibited by that. It's like, I when I first started doing mine, I don't know if you've seen some of my older stuff, my older videos, but I used to put the trailer in.
Like, oh, yeah.
And I got flagged for that. You can't do that.
Right.
And I'm
just
like,
the audio.
How can you not put the trailer in? It's an advertisement for the movie. Right. That's not even like you're people are going to get mad that I'm playing a trailer for a movie, because I would try to grab the trailer directly from the movie that it was. Right. It's not somebody else's.
Yeah, the original trailer.
Right, the original trailer on YouTube that whoever it was, like Warner Brothers, put out. I put it in, and they're like, nope, it's flagged. And I'm sure maybe I could contest that. I don't want to contest all that crap. And I'm not getting any money from YouTube now anyways, but I'm just trying to... But that's what it would be. So say you had a video. They still allow the video out, but what would happen is... Like, say we did the trailer for RRR and I was making money, right, off of YouTube. That video, RRR video, now is going to, for John and I, that's huge, because it's approaching 10,000 views. That would be bringing in, if we were monetized already on YouTube, that would be bringing in some decent money for us, okay? But if it had the trailer in it and it got flagged, we wouldn't get anything. So you see, that's why people like Todd and people, they're all trying to make sure they don't get flagged. It's because if you get demonetized, the video will still go out, but you're just not going to get it. It's basically worthless.
Right.
As an income, if that's what you're doing. And they all have, like, Todd's channel and all those channels, they're all monetized, because they all have, you have to have 1,000 viewers. You have to have, I definitely have enough views per month. I just don't have enough viewers yet. So someday, maybe.
Well, you're climbing. I mean, I noticed the numbers, you know, and I have to, I just actually set up, because originally I told you I was going to use a phone. But, you know, I have the laptop. I said, let me open an account. It's much easier, bigger screen. Mm. You know, not that I need it, but just the phone was, I figured, let me do it this way. And I actually took a bunch of notes.
You got notes?
All right. I did. It's like a scribble, but
So yeah. Let's start with your start in home theater. What do you got on notes on that? Do you remember how you started in home theater?
I mean,
I know you do.
So I probably have been, you know, doing it right, or, you know, doing it the way I, you know, started Frankenstein and equipment, and I actually was helping, had to be 20, 25 years ago. I helped my brother-in-law, my sister, and her husband move, and he gave me a pair of floor-standing speakers, audio acoustics, I think.
Yeah.
You know, not top of the line, but something that I didn't have, and I set them up, and I was just kind of using them for music.
Yeah.
And, you know, I eventually got some from Radio Shack. I got a pair of, I think they were, RCA ribbon tweeter, you know.
Wow.
Heavy. They were heavy, but they were small.
Yeah.
But I got two of those. And I actually, I used the audio acoustic speakers, which are just so, I mean, you look back now and you're like, well, you know, but at the time you don't know. So you know, they're really boomy. They got a 12-inch woofer on them, and they're just kind of overpowering, you know. Yeah. But at the time, I didn't know, so I had those set up with the RCAs mounted behind me, or high up on the wall behind me, not knowing about ear level and all this stuff, you know. I mean, there's so much you learn along the way.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while. I don't even think I had a center speaker.
Yeah.
But so I just did that for a while, and then I got sick of the, you know, all the. It kind of took up space, so I went with, I don't know if you ever heard of it, a Zvox. Mm-hmm. Zvox soundbar.
Okay.
You know, Zvox.
Yep.
Yeah, it's. I think they're the independent company. I don't even know if they still make this stuff, but I saw it at Best Buy. And it has, you know, it had the built-in subwoofers. It was just a flat box, but real, like, built like a tank, you know?
Yeah.
And I loved the sound of it in the store. So I picked that up, slid that under the TV, and don't have to worry about any more of the surround sound speakers and all like that. But it wasn't the same, you know? So, I mean, it was good, but eventually I went back to better speakers. But when I say better speakers, obviously it's not what I had today, but... So I went with, you know, you walk into Best Buy, you see the Polks, you see the Klipsch, right? So I got...
Yep.
And back then I was... of course, you know, you try to be frugal with the money. You don't want to get the most expensive, but you don't want to get the least either.
Right.
So I went with, you know, some Polk front speakers, some Polk surrounds. I think I had a Sony subwoofer. Yeah, and it was a start, you know. And then, you know, as you learn more about it, you get, you know, more obviously, you know, you can't keep up with the technology. I mean, the new stuff, there's so much stuff coming out. There's always something coming out that's better, you know. But damn, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff.
Yeah, you said that in one of your emails, like how expensive this hobby is. You're like,
yeah, it's just.
You're like, the passion we have for this expensive hobby.
Yeah, and.
And it is.
You know, you go get your new stuff, and, you know, you get home and you use it for a couple of days, and then, oh, look at what just came out. Wow, look at that. You know? But what's good about it is, like what I did with, I had a couple of Klipsch subwoofers that I ended up selling, and going SVS.
No, nice.
I ended up, of course it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a price match, you know, because the clips were a lot cheaper, but
yeah,
boy, does it pay to buy quality. I mean,
well, that's how
night and day difference.
Oh yeah. And that's how SVS started out, and that's what kind of attracted me to them in the early days, is that they were, and what's funny is, and I said this when I was on SVS, I'm like, I love my NHT speakers, because they were, NHT was around before SVS, and NHT was the same idea. It was like, look, this small company, they're trying to put out a quality speaker at a direct to consumer price. So you didn't have to go through, you weren't going into Best Buy, you weren't going into, like, it was you bought this from them. And
right.
That's how it was touted to me. So the more research I did on that, and this is back in the 90s before internet and stuff, so I had to go places and ask people. And what I found funny is back in those days, if you went into a Best Buy and you asked them about something like an NHT, they wouldn't know what it was. But right. Then you would go into like the small home theater places and they go, oh yeah. And to me, that was like a sign of quality, right? Because you were like, oh, okay. Like only the people that really know about home theater know about these. So, okay. And then you start talking about them. And then that's where I started to learn what a neutral speaker meant, as opposed to a warmer speaker, like a B&W or something like that. And would quote, and I'm saying quotation fingers, warmer. And like, there's all these different terms. And we tend to give colors to our sound So he's like, this is a warmer speaker, a brighter speaker. It's this or that. And that, you know, that's how I started with NHT. And then when SVS came along, they were trying to do the same thing. They were trying to give you that Velodyne experience for a direct to consumer price. And they nailed it. Right. And then that's why they're as big as they are now. And everybody knows SVS speakers. And then you have other companies coming along trying to do what SVS is doing, and they're succeeding. They're doing a good job, but it's, and that, I think that competition is what's helping us as the consumer. It keeps that price down and it keeps the technology advancing. Right.
Oh yeah.
And you're getting, I just had to put a new water heater in my house. And I asked the place, I'm like, do you have one that has an app with it? Because, you know, that's what you want.
Everything these days is run by an app. Yeah.
Right. But I'm like, you know, when I got my SVS subwoofers, they didn't have the pros that have the app with it yet.
Right,
and I would love to get, I want to get that. My next subwoofers will have that app. Which is fun when you first get it, and you'll toy around with it and you'll mess with it, but for a couple of days, and then it's set it and forget it. But wish I had it. But on my water heater, I even want it because I'm like, oh, I could monitor the water temperature. I could do it.
Right.
And they didn't have it. But the guy laughed. He goes, oh, we have people ask that. And they do have them, just not for the kind that I need. I'm like, I love, and I apologize to the plumber. I go, I'm a tech guy. I just love to have gadgets on my stuff. So that's why I'm asking. Right. And he was fine.
The app on, so I actually, to expand on the, selling the clips, I ended up getting two PB1000s.
Nice.
Not the pro, not the ones with the app.
Yep.
I love those. I had those for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And, you know,
how big is your room?
Well, it's in the basement. So the ceilings aren't very high, but it's probably 11 by 15.
Oh, yeah. So those 1,000 are kicking. Yeah.
But now it's probably a 7-foot ceiling.
That's what I got.
Okay. Yep. And I have an open end. There's not, it's not a box. It's not a box.
Okay.
So you lose pressure with that. You know, I didn't build a false wall or nothing because we're always, you know, moving stuff around in and out. So if I had to put a wall there, I'd have to put a big door there. It just.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounded fine the way it was. So I left that alone. But I got some, so I ended up getting the PB1000s, which I loved.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, us being how we are, you know, the 700 watts just wasn't enough.
Yep.
Right? I ended up selling those, and I got one SB3000, which...
Ooh.
I gotta tell you.
Wow, you did a big jump.
Yeah, but my plan is to get a second one of those.
Yep.
You know, you're going from 700 watts peak to 2500 watts peak.
Yeah.
And it's the one sub by itself. And the good thing about the sealed subwoofers, I used to have to kind of, with the ported, ported's are great, but I used to have to kind of fiddle around with placement.
Oh, really?
Right? But with the sealed, I got it up front, you know, in between the two towers.
Yep.
And I actually was fiddling with the, at first I was kind of hesitant. I didn't want to mess with the, the PEQ on that, on the app.
I don't have the app. I wouldn't know I've never used it.
But they say to use that, you know, the equalization setting, you need like a mini DSP?
Yeah.
To measure it, but... You know, I don't have one of those, so I was basically fooling with it, tweaking it, seeing what sounded better, and I actually ended up using the equalizer, and I got a nice, I mean, it's pretty, if you know, you know, home theater and sound, you can kind of figure it out if you're listening for it, and I got a good setting on it now, where you get a nice, I mean, the subwoofer alone is punchy and it's violent, and I love it. You know, but you can get even more out of it with the app. That's what's great about it.
Yeah. Speaking
so
of
the second one's coming maybe by Christmas or something.
Oh, yeah. That'll be nice.
And honestly, I don't even think I need it. But
you might not. I mean, the second one just helps you have more consistency throughout the room. But if you're
and the thing is,
in where you're sitting, that's you're good. You know?
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't have like three rows of seats.
Right.
I have two seats down here, two recliners. You know what I mean? Because very rarely does, other than a couple of buddies of mine and my future son-in-law, they'll come down and watch movies with me. My wife don't care. My daughters don't care. Yeah. So I got the two seats. There's really not a bad spot down here.
Right.
Yeah. So I can either get the second subwoofer, which is another, you know, I don't know, I think it's a grand, right? For the
3,000. I think the 3,000s are like 1,500. If I remember right, something like that.
Well, that's the PB. Now I'm getting the SB.
Oh, okay.
Which is maybe, yeah, which is cheaper because it's a less. It's not as big,
right?
But then now I'm looking to upgrade my disc player. I actually wanted your thoughts on the 820 because I have the Sony. Yeah, well, it's got great reviews, and that's actually the one I'm gonna pull the trigger on. But,
That's,
you know, there's so much that you want to do.
Are you running a projector?
No. Just, I have a 65-inch OLED.
Oh, okay.
A Sony.
So.
And that's another thing.
Okay.
I want a bigger screen, obviously, but I'm not going to go, like, I thought about selling the OLED and getting, like, an 85 LED, but nah. I don't think that's.
I think
you're kind of going backwards.
Yeah, image quality, you're going backwards, right?
Yeah.
The only time I would go backwards from an OLED would be to go to a projector, because then the image the size difference is big,
substantial,
right? You're doubling, right? To go up, you know, from 65 to even 85, you're only going up 20 inches. Sounds funny to say only.
Well, yeah, but it's 10 inches on each side, so it's
right.
It's but, really but not it's, huge.
Yeah, but when you go to, if you even just go to 110 inches, you know, you're getting, that's almost double of a 65 inch. It's like I have a 55 in the living room, and I have a 110 in the theater, so it's literally, when I put on, I can use like on Dish TV. When I used to have Dish TV, you could do a quad box and watch sports on Sundays. You could have two football games, a baseball game, or whatever. So you could
a grid.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Four boxes going, and then you could bounce around on which one had the sound, but it divided the screen evenly. So down in my theater, I literally, that would turn it into four 55-inch televisions.
Right.
And you're sitting there watching four 55-inch televisions, which feel really small because it's four of them all put together compared to the one, you know, 110. But that's the only time I would say, if you've started with an OLED, I think it's really tough to go to 85. Although they are really good. They're getting...
Well, unless they're coming out with OLEDs now. I know you're... Yeah. One of your listeners, Mike what is Schraub. It, Loverboy?
Yeah.
Loverboy?
Love and Thunder.
Oh, Love and Thunder, right.
Loverboy.
77 he's got, right? The OLED.
Yeah, he's got the 77 OLED. He loves it. He loves it.
Of course he does. Of course he does.
But he was going from just a 4K with no HDR.
Yes, that's a big upgrade.
Really, he was a caveman, right?
right. Yeah.
No, you know, because, I mean, going from that, having no HDR to an OLED, it's like, that's insane. That's a big jump, because all of a sudden you're getting the best HDR there is right there.
Right.
And you had none.
Right.
So, and I think he went up a little bit in picture size as well. I think he went from a 70 inch, if I remember right, to
up to 77. Yeah.
Yeah. He went from 70 to 77. So he got a slight increase in size and a dramatic increase in picture quality. So
dramatic.
I don't honestly, now that I think about it, going from a 65 inch OLED to an 85 inch LCD, I'm not.
And they're getting better too.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying. I think because of the size difference, And you have a a relatively dedicated room, light controlled. Mm-hmm. You might actually, and you might get.
But you know what?
I would go and check those out and see how good they can look.
Oh, yeah, that's the plan. But this room down here, I have one little basement window that actually right now has an air conditioner stuck in it. So it's pitch black down here. All you see is the screen.
Yeah.
So
once you calibrate that down and you get that, you know, the LCDs, from what I understand, is the advantage of those is in a well-lit room. They're brighter than an OLED.
For bright, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you calibrate that thing down and, you're probably going to lose a little detail in the dark areas over an OLED, but it might be negligible. It might be, but, because they are getting good. So
yeah, well,
check it out. And that is a 20-inch difference. Now that I think about it, that is a pretty good, where it's that negligible, but 20 inches is a big jump. So,
well, how about going from a 65 OLED to like a 100-inch display?
Oh my God.
Not an OLED, but.
Right. I know. I want to see those myself because those I can't imagine. I mean, what are they going to look like? I can't imagine they're going to be that good. I think it's going to be
a huge box too. How do you get in the house? Seriously. Well,
that's the logistics of it. It's like, I already measured my house the way where my door is to my theater. I have a straight shot to the door. I have a walkout basement. So it's kind of a straight shot. If I had to get something like that in, I could. I could get like the screen that's on my wall. I could take off and walk right out the door with it. So if I can manage that, I could manage 100-inch or 110-inch OLED, say, or
that's a little bigger than a full sheet of drywall.
Yes, it is. When I said that, I was like, oh my God, this is bigger than a sheet of drywall.
Yeah.
But so that's what you're managing. But here's one of the things that I think I heard on AV Rant. They said a while ago, they're like, what happens when it goes bad? That's tough.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I think where I don't know if those are going to be as feasible, you know, as I like the idea of them getting down to the smaller and then we Lego them together. You know, they do a smaller version and then you put them together to create the size screen you want. The modular.
Yeah, but I don't know. My eyes would just go directly to that seam.
There is none.
Are you going to?
There is none. They're that good.
Really?
They're seamless. Yes.
The micro LED, right?
Yeah, they already have the technology. It's mass producing them. That's the issue right now. And they have the technology where you'd put these together. You would not be able to see those seams. And it's that good. So
that makes all the difference right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you're seeing it in some of the higher end televisions now where the edge of the television is the edge of the television. It just drops off. It's like, you know, like an infinity pool. Look at that. Boop, just drops off.
Right.
So they have that. It's just being able to get these so that you could cheap enough. They have to mass produce them and then you can buy them cheap enough to be able to put together a television the way, you know, to what you want. So
it's funny, like anytime something new comes out, you know, a lot of people, you know, have to jump on it right away. But if you wait a year,
oh yeah,
it's amazing. Like that price just drops in half.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Because they come out with new
tech. If you can resist it, it's well worth it.
Yeah, and it depends on what it is. I mean, I remember jumping in on, you know, Blu-ray and HD DVD because starting price was more feasible to do. It was you could get one for $400 a piece, and then it was fun to compare them and do my own thing at the time, and that's what I think is like. That's why I think this show, the Takeover Tuesdays, really doing well, and I'm getting a good response from it, is because for all intents and purposes, we've all been doing our own podcast in our head for forever because we're A-B-ing stuff all by ourselves in our house. That's what I did with HD DVD and Blu-ray all by myself. And I was just like, look at the difference. And now we just want to talk to people about it. And because of podcasting, it's available, but that's all we ever do.
When that HD DVD came out, I remember going into Best Buy and seeing it on the displays, and really, I think the movie they were showing was V for Vendetta.
Yeah,
right? I had it. And it was that, it was that, that they blew up the Parliament scene, you know, and everything. So I said, oh, I'm going to grab that. So I grabbed the movie, paid for it, got it home, not knowing, hey, you need to buy the player guy. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, I got to spend it. And at the time, it had to be $400
a
player.
$400 or $500
right?
a piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of a buzzkill, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a Toshiba and then... Toshiba.
I had a Hitachi. A Hitachi 1080i, I think it was, interlace.
Yeah.
You know, rear projection. It was a behemoth, but.
Oh.
Yeah. How times have changed, right?
Yeah, my, well, in my theater now, my theater is 20 years old. The one I'm currently in right now is 20. I can't believe it myself. It's 20 years old, and it started with a 65-inch Mitsubishi rear projection television.
I remember sitting on the bucket, right?
Yeah, exactly. There you go. And I'm like, man. And it's funny because the tweets are going back and forth because Mike Love and Thunder Schramm tweeted out an old picture of his theater where he
I saw that.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah. And I think the center speaker was bigger than the TV.
Yeah. The TV was, he had a computer monitor, it looked like.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it's like, my wife right now is like, she's like, I think I can find us some pictures. It's like from my apartment theater, living room theater that we had. And she goes, I know we have pictures of it. She goes, it'll probably be pictures of when the kids came home from the hospital and the decorations pictures we took of that. He goes, yeah. She's like, but that was the theater. It was the living room. So what the hell? So right. I'm trying to find those to be able to put those out. But, and then I'm trying to, kids nowadays, everybody now, we take pictures of everything because it's so easy. But 20 years ago, you had to get a camera to do it, and you just
right. And there were actual pictures, maybe in your phone, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You had to take it and get developed.
So what's that? Is that a Brightside shirt you're wearing, or
it's actually a home theater shirt. It says, "It's okay, you're not into home theater." It's a kind of a smart people hobby anyways. Ah. My kids gave me this for like Father's Day or something one year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
So, what else?
What do you got in your notes?
What do I got in my notes? I got a bunch of stuff here. Do you golf?
No.
That's in my notes. You don't golf? No. A hockey player that doesn't golf?
I'm going to make a lot of people angry. I golf when people ask me to golf. They'll be like, you want to go golfing? Or it's a benefit. You know, I did a lot of golfing when I was coaching hockey and stuff because we had benefits for the kids. We have golf outings, and great way to raise money. So I would do that or any kind of that. I would go. But it's kind of boring. And I'm just like, okay, so I got to hit the ball all by myself and then go find it and then do it again.
Yeah,
and then
you're that guy. Okay.
Do that 18 times. I have one round of golf that it's still sitting out on the counter over there in my basement with all my other memorabilia. I have one ball that I did I played an entire round of golf with one ball. One time. So I was like,
that's pretty good.
Never lost the ball. I was like, all right, cool. And on the 18th hole, I tee off.
Was there an app for it?
For the
ball?
No. I know. That would be cool. Do they have that?
No. I don't know.
I was like, put a chip in the ball. I would
put a sensor in there or something. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You're fine. Never lose a ball.
Yeah. And you could sell them for $50 because you're never going to lose the thing, right?
There's an idea. You heard it here first.
There you go.
Yeah. We started it.
But on the 18th hole, I'm teeing off and the thing, shanked hard into the woods. And my buddy looks at me and goes, oh, you were doing so good. Wow. And it was still in the air. And then you hear clank, hit a tree and bounced right back into the fairway.
Yeah, just like you planned it. Yep.
Yeah, I go, no, I planned it. It's a big oak in there.
It's a bank shot.
It's a bank shot. Easy. Look at me. I'm set up for the green right there. Look at that.
Right, no problem.
But I have golfed. I do golf. I don't prefer to golf. How's that?
Got it. Understood.
You golf?
I do. I'm not a you know, perfectionist in it or anything. I have a set of clubs. I go, you know, construction. My buddies go all the time, and you know, obviously lately it's been so freaking hot.
Oh yeah.
It's got to be 80 degrees max for me to go. I don't want to go out there and cook.
No.
You know, that's not so fun. I haven't gone lately, but I like to go. I go probably a dozen times a year.
Now, do you go because of the golf, or you go because you like hanging out with the guys?
No, I don't like hanging out with the guys. I just go to golf.
Oh, really? Oh, see, yeah. I go to hang out with the guy. I go to hang out with guys.
Well, I don't mean it in a,
you know. Derogatory. I know what you mean.
Right. I just.
So would you go like golfing by yourself?
No.
Oh, I play hockey with a guy that golfs every morning by himself. He'll get up. Yeah. He lives like 5 minutes from his golf course. He gets up, not every morning, but like probably 4 or 5 times a week, he'll go golf and he'll do 9 holes before work every day.
Nice.
He loves it. He's in his mid-30s. Real good.
And wow.
He loves it. He's not a pro. I mean, he's actually a pilot. But yeah, I play hockey with him and he's a great guy, but I'm like, how do you do that? I'd be bored out of my mind. And just the mentality, the two of us, we go back and forth. I'm like, how do you do that? And he's like, I love it. And I'm like, I hate it.
Yeah, it's a good way to kill 5 hours, really.
Yeah, 18 holes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that's the joke, right? Like, yeah. There's people that's the running joke. There's men that love their families, and then there's men that golf.
I'll put me in the middle somewhere there.
You could say that because your family's not going to listen to this.
Well, I think they are, but it's a joke.
I know. Yeah, that's
So on the notes as well, so that covers the golf question. Now, your settings, is that like a secret sauce? You don't like to give away your settings?
No. What do you mean?
Because I was going to ask you.
I'll tell you. What do you want to know?
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Get ready.
Settings for what? I have to remember them, but go ahead.
That's all we deal with, the settings. Okay. Subwoofer settings, speaker settings.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, levels.
Well.
Yeah, just because I've been fooling with this stuff for years, and I finally got the sound that I really think is top notch.
Yeah.
But I've always, you know, I've always had to, had a setting set wrong or the like, level's too high.
Give me even an when you calibrate of something that you know you did and then you found out later that it was wrong and then you corrected it. Give me an example and I'll try to. Because I have an answer for you. You're probably not going to like it, but I have an answer for you, but I think it's the most accurate to the situation you're dealing with. But I'm interested in something that you did and then corrected that you know.
Okay, so learned. on my receiver, I'm actually, right now I have, and that's another component I want to upgrade. I mean, it's like, you know, you got everything right, and then you want to change and upgrade everything.
Right.
But anyway, so on my receiver, I have a Sony SDR 1080 7.2 AV receiver, which has Dolby Atmos, has DTS:X, it has a calibration mic, which I really don't even bother using that, only for like maybe distance. So I had my setting, and I don't know where I heard it or how I ended up this way, but on my on my LFE setting on the Sony, I ended up, and it was, it was stuck on this setting for a while. I had it on LFE plus main. In other words, you were getting basically double bass.
Okay.
Instead of setting it on either main or LFE, I had it on LFE plus main.
Right.
For the longest time.
Right.
And, you know, there was some movies, like, for instance, the newest Suicide Squad, okay?
There's a scene, I think, right?
Yes, yeah. There's a scene in there where Harley Quinn is, she's just been tortured, and then she escapes, and she's kicking ass, going through the, you know, and then there's flowers coming out, and I think the song was playing, just a gigolo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, yeah, you with me?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So when I had it on this setting, I could barely even listen to that scene because there was so much bass pumping out.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of triggered me to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I had the subwoofer levels low and, you know,
the distance is right. So you were muddying the room by running it.
It was so.
Right.
It was so boomy. I even went to the extent of, on the back of these towers, I have a port. I even thought they were too close to the wall, so I plugged them.
Ooh.
I actually put rolled up socks in the back of the speakers because I thought I was getting too much. I couldn't figure it out. So right. I'm doing, you know, a process of elimination. And, you know, to make a long story short, I ended up going back into the settings, changing it from LFE plus main to just LFE, and my God, you know, it clicked, and it was like,
right.
I've been listening to this way all these years and could never figure it out. It's just one setting that can screw up the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh,
you know? But it's so satisfying to hear it the right way. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that's what's fun about.
And you can't relax until you figure it out, right?
Oh,
you
can't. No.
There's no way it should.
Yeah.
It shouldn't sound that way. There's got to be something wrong, you know?
Right.
Go through the entire system.
And that's the thing is, like, you go through this stuff year after year and you're learning, you know, from each mistake, you're learning, like, oh,
okay, yes,
that doesn't sound right. And that's not the way it's supposed to sound. But then you're like, and sometimes it doesn't click. It takes a scene, like you said, like the Suicide Squad. And you're like, wait a minute, that can't be right. And it's stuff like that I think is more valuable than reading it or hearing it. And it, especially to me. Okay. So like, that's what's fun. Like Rob H and I talk and he retains everything. He's so good at reading stuff and reciting it back to you, but he also retains it for himself. Whereas I can't learn that way. I can't read and then retain. I need to experience it to understand it and understand why that did what it did. Okay. So like in your situation, what you just learned in that situation is how important it is for subwoofer placement in a room. Because when you scatter the bass around the room, you're muddying the room. More bass isn't the answer on how to get better bass. It's accurate. It's what you're looking for is accurate bass.
Accurate, clean, tight,
right,
powerful. Yep.
And the ways a sound waves, without getting into all of that, what you were doing is you were just taking those sound more. You were just adding more bass waves to that room, and now you're not getting that nice, clean, discreet bass that you're supposed to be
bloated,
getting.
Over-bloated,
And you're literally muddying it to yourself, and you're like, oh. So what happens is when you go to all LFE, all bass gets funneled right to the where you have those subwoofers located. Now,
right, and
I could have read that in a book and been like, yeah, but okay, I'm not really following what they're saying until you go and try it. Then you go, look at that.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. And I think that makes a big difference. And we all learn in different ways, but that's what's fun about home theater is you're getting entertained while you're messing with your stuff because you're watching all of this content, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's...
But when the setting is right, when you, like, obviously, I should have been right a long time ago, but now, you know, like a movie like Aquaman, right, which is heavy bass, right?
Yeah.
You get that heavy bass, but when you can, the next scene, you can hear the fork hit the floor or a glass shatter. You know what I mean?
So the dialogue.
It's on it. Right.
Right.
You don't get that, you know, overblown bass that carries through the whole movie on everything they do.
Right. Exactly. And you get, and if you get an explosion or a gunshot, you get clean, precise bass. You get that little bit
instant.
That feel, and it's boom, and then it's gone. It's not reverberating through the room, and muddying the other sounds that you're supposed to be hearing, you know?
Yeah, and it's just crazy how I was listening to it that way. Why, I don't know, but it's just...
More is better. That's what came from the 80s, buddy. That's
I guess. Or maybe it was just I didn't understand the settings enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But now
until you actually hear... Yeah, right. And I'll tell you, night and day. All right, so on your subwoofers, right, I know you don't have the app.
No.
But...
My subwoofers, I run my... So here's, for instance...
You go right all the way to LFE?
Mm-hmm.
And let everything, the receiver...
Everything's
right.
Small.
Like that's the
when
way
I,
to do it.
When I just redid my... I reran Odyssey EQ with my Marantz, okay? I haven't run the Odyssey X or whatever it's called, where you... with the I bought the microphone. I haven't upgraded...
That's an advanced...
That's the advanced version, right? I'm going to run that in a few months. I want to experience this one under the same parameters that I experienced the Denon. So before this, I had a Denon X6300H.
And what are you doing with that?
Denon. Well, that's part of the plan. I'll give you a sneak peek. I'm going to be talking about it on Friday's podcast. But part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is I am in the process of hopefully buying a new home and moving and building another theater there. My son's going to take this home. And what's going to happen is this theater staying here. So when I move, I'm at the point right now, I was just saying to my wife, when we move, all I need...
Now, when you say this, the theater's staying there, what do you mean? Just the room, not the equipment, not the chairs, not the...
I'm leaving everything.
And I'm what?
And I'm that's why I'm in the middle of building my new theater now in this room. I'll take the equipment that I have that's extra, and I'm leaving him behind.
Oh,
so,
I get it.
So when I leave, I'm not leaving him with just an empty room. He's going to have a full theater. It's going to be a downgrade.
I get it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. So when I leave right now, say I were to leave tomorrow, it's not happening for months, maybe a year, but say I left tomorrow, right now, the only thing I would need to buy is a new projector, a new screen, and a new set of speakers. And then that's it. And chairs. Yeah. And I need to buy chairs. And that's what I said to my wife. And you know how great my wife is? She goes, so could we do it for $20,000? I was like,
what?
I went, well, chairs. I go, well, chairs. She goes, so about 27? I was like, yeah. She goes, yeah, that's all right.
Let's like, make it 30.
Woo! Oh, yeah, wow. You know I will.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, because I always round down. If something's like...
my wife won't give me $30. Never mind $30,000.
I'm like, Jesus. All right. So, yeah, we'll do that. So, I'll get a new projector. I'll get a new screen. I'll do... And that's in a new set of speakers all around. And then... But I'll take the Marantz with me, the amplifiers, and I'll take this Denon.
Oh, you're not leaving your son the Marantz?
No. Well, it depends. If it takes a few years to do this, then maybe, because then I'll upgrade to something else, because eventually I want to get to a Trinov or something like that someday.
Oh, God. That's $30,000 right there, isn't it?
Not the one I want. I'll have a relatively smaller room. There. Come on, Mike. It's only $16,000.
Oh,
it's insane. Oh,
what the hell am I thinking?
It's insane. I know. Exactly.
Hey, I'm taking a guess here. Are you in Franklin?
I grew up in Franklin.
Okay.
Douglas. I'm south.
Douglas,
south of Worcester. Worcester.
Yeah, I know where it is.
Yeah.
My son used to live in the Blackstone.
Yep. That's the next town over from Franklin. It's right between me right now.
Right.
Relatively between me and Franklin.
Yeah.
Yep. My parents still live in Franklin. My brother and sister still live in Franklin.
Oh, so everybody's close.
We're all right there. And I'm in Franklin all the time. Grew up there.
So
as far as settings, okay. So let's get back to settings and why I.
Okay. So let me interrupt you.
Okay.
when you do your on-screen setup.
Yeah.
Now, what do you Where do your towers roll off as far as to the subwoofer? Like, do you have them set all at 80? Like,
so my front three roll off at 80, and the rest roll off at 100. Because,
oh, really? So you have them.
So when I ran the Odyssey, my front handle down to, like, I want to say like 50, no problem. So I rolled those off nicely at 80, sent everything else to the sub. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the room, depending, you know, my overhead speakers, my surround speakers, they all did this funky thing after like 100. They were they were as flat as could be all the way to 100 or 90. And then they fall off like below that. And they did this funky thing. They had like it looked like a heartbeat thing. So I was like, why mess with any of that in between 100 and 80? I'll just roll those off at 100. So I know I'm getting flat across the room. And then my subs run flat. And I have all the graphics. My subs run run flat from, I want to say, in the teens all the way to just over 100. Then they go off a cliff in the room.
Yeah, because you have the PB2000s, correct?
Yes. I have two PB2000s,
and you have
centered at the front and the rear of the room.
Okay, and one in the front, one in the back.
Yep, and I get great bass response out of that. And when the Odyssey, it runs nice and flat, so I'm getting, for all intents and purposes, a nice flat response all the way across the spectrum.
Now, do you use the isolation feet
on those? On the front one, I have some stuff underneath it,
because like a pad or something.
I don't have the space because my center channel is above it. It's not sitting on it, but it's above it. So I don't have the space below the screen to do that. And then in the rear, I did put the isolation feet on and I'm on a, but I'm also on a riser. So when I put the isolation feet on, I didn't really notice too much of a difference. I didn't have an issue with that. Because I'm on a riser, it was sitting on a carpet as it was, so it wasn't too much of an
issue. Is your riser insulated?
No. No.
No.
Nope. My riser is a 2x8. It's basically, I built a deck inside my house.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, right?
Yeah, and I think I did 2x10s. It's either a 10-inch or a 12-inch riser. I might be a 12-inch riser.
I don't have the ceiling height for that. I got prime elevation speakers up on my ceiling,
right?
Like a little left and right of the two chairs.
That's
above
why
you.
I went with in ceiling is because,
yeah, but my son-in-law, who my future son-in-law, who was about 6'5", right?
Yeah.
He has to bend down to sit in a chair.
Right. Right. And that's why, like, I have the same thing. I got like a 7 foot, it's seven, maybe 7.5 foot ceiling. Because I put the drywall, and this is one of the 20 years ago, I didn't know about the isolation that I knew that I know now. I actually know I could actually design my room right now to be isolated from the rest of the house and lose minimal ceiling height. There's a way to do it. I know how to do it now, but I didn't then. So I double drywalled directly to the joists above me. So I didn't, you know, that's what I have for a ceiling. And then, you know, so any bass, anything, it's just vibrating the floor upstairs.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
But now, that's why I'm up with in-ceiling speakers, because I didn't have that space. I don't have that space over my head to put an SVS, you know.
Yeah, especially with the bracket and everything, even makes it lower.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of have it off to the side. You know, they're pointing down to the listening area.
Right.
But they're kind of angled off to the side, to the left, or to the right, kind of in the middle of the room. So, and you know what it is? I can't really, my receiver is not upgradable, which means I don't have any pre-outs on the back of it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I can't add an amp or anything like that. But you know what? The room is, the way it's set up now, if I got like side surrounds or another set of height speakers, it really wouldn't make a difference. I don't think.
It depends on the... I would love to get front wides. I can't because where my door is. I couldn't put them where they're supposed to be to take advantage of it. But what's nice about front wides is it expands that opening soundstage. Even like if you're in a fairly narrow room, it gives you the appearance like when the
it opens it up.
It's
yeah.
gonna make it. Yeah. It's gonna make things pan further. And you know how much I love a pan, so it can help make things pan out further. And that's where I would like to get someday. Is my ultimate is to have front wides, front heights, and six Atmos. And, you know, so basically a 7-1 with front wide.
And a couple heights on the floor, right?
Oh, yeah. At least a couple. That would be nice. By the time I'm ready to go, I'm like, that would be nice if they started adding those. Because that's where I think, like, the elevation, the SVS Prime Elevation speakers, how nice would those be if you put those on the floor and they're angled up? If there's a codec to take advantage of that, I think those would be fantastic. And I think they would look great down there too with the screens on. You know, you put the screen on them where I know I said on Twitter, I think SVS put out a thing like with the screen on, you know, the grill on it or without. And I'm like, if they're on your ceiling and you're not and you're not worried about hitting them, I would take the grills off those things because I think they look beautiful, you know, and I think those look so cool sitting up on the ceiling, aiming down. If you have a 10-foot ceiling, I would definitely put those up, take the grills off so you could see those.
Well, I was going to ask you that too.
Yeah.
That's part of my notes is, where is it? Speaker grills on or off. before you answer that, your fronts, your main towers, you got them towed, right?
Oh yeah,
you got them towed in.
I have bookshelves across the front. I have the NHT bookshelf, the C
on stands.
They're built into the wall. I built into the wall, even so it's kind of a false wall. Grills are off of those, but then I have speaker grill. I have speaker grill cloth across the front of my room.
Acoustic cloth,
So it's. I would like, it depends on the speaker, it depends on the grill, because there are some grills that it's part of the artwork, like they look fantastic with the grill on, but then I've seen, I would say probably 90% of the time, if I'm displaying my speakers, I want the grills off. I feel like the grills are, they're more.
Well, what about when you're listening to them?
I don't think they don't make a noticeable difference. And that's why.
Yeah, I think the only difference it makes maybe at the very high notes, you lose a little bit of that, but you're not going to notice it.
You're not going to notice it. And the thing is, like, now I take them off if I'm putting them behind, because I do think I don't want to double. I don't want to have that. But even that, I don't think it's going to change it that much. I'll tell you another one. I had to put them on. Okay, and this is for people out there that like acoustically transparent screens, and this is one of the things I learned years ago is that, and why I don't like acoustically transparent screens is because the light goes through it. Now, my original NHT speakers, just like these ones here, they had the piano gloss finish on it. Depending on the scene in the movie, the light would go through, hit the piano gloss finish, and now you're getting these pinhole bright lights coming back at you from your screen.
Yeah, not good.
I didn't like that. So I actually had to take and I had to put the grills on. Guess what? That's not enough because the grills didn't cover the whole part. So I had to take black cloth hockey tape because it's flat and tape the edges of my speaker.
You mean friction tape? The friction tape not that used to wrap your hockey?
Not the friction tape, just the cloth tape that you'd use.
Okay.
Right? Like on your handle, on your stick or something.
Yep.
No, just the black, because it's a flat, you know, it wouldn't reflect light. So I would take to the edges of my speakers because you're losing light. And light is going through that screen. If sound can come through, light can go through, right?
Yeah.
And we're paying all of this money. And that's when I learned it back then. I was like, what am I doing? And it's like,
even a pinhole can make a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, we're paying all this money for extra pixels and high high contrast and bright lights and this and that. And we're going to send all the image, send a good percentage of the image right through to the other side. No, I want it all coming back to me. So and it doesn't mean that I wouldn't get I still mess with it in my head, like, ooh, acoustically transparent, full length of the room. I still mess with it. It's a compromise. But that's, as I sit right now, that's why I go with a standard screen, because I'm not willing for that compromise right now. And it definitely is a compromise when you go to acoustically transparent.
Yeah, because you can put your speakers left and right of the screen, right? You don't have to put the speaker in front of the screen.
Right. But
you have the room.
Right. When I got my first projector, I couldn't wait to put my speakers behind the screen because I wanted that presentation.
Yeah, because you didn't know at the time.
Yeah. And it's like, I've seen people on YouTube that they design it so that they can lift their screen up and show off, and they put lights back there and show off the speakers. Yeah. And that, to me, I get that. I love that idea. I love, like, that you show them off and you'll be like, this is, look at, you can't even see them. And now they're back here. But that's a compromise over the ultimate, what we're ultimately building these for is to watch this, all this content,
for quality,
right?
Yeah, the quality. Right. We want the top quality.
You're compromising quality to be able to lift the hood on your, you know what I mean?
Mustang.
Like, yeah, you're lifting the hood and being like, check out the engine. Now you close it. And then like, all right, now you're doing, how many times in your life did you do that? And then, now, the entire time you're in that theater, you've just compromised your quality for those 5 minutes of fame.
Right.
So, I you know, but I get it because I was there once. I understand that. I've done that, mm-hmm. and I love that. But yeah, so that's where I'm at right now. And that's, you know, speaker grill cloth, though, getting back to the original, doesn't bother me if it's just if you choose to have it. I don't think it affects your sound all that much.
And yeah, no, that's not a problem. The only reason I keep my grills on, so what I have is, you know, I got the two elevations mm-hmm. on the ceiling. I have my two towers are the Klipsch. I think they're R28.
Okay.
Floor standing, and they're actually massive. They got two eight inch woofers, and it's got the rubber molded. You know, the tweeter, the horn tweeter.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a reference premiere, which means they changed the tweeter from, I don't know, some kind of metal before, or like a hard plastic.
Yeah.
And into a molded rubber, which really, you know, lessens the brightness, because Klipsch had a reputation for the bright speakers.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps. So those two are in the front. And then I have two SVS Prime bookshelves on stands in the back for the rear surrounds.
Yep. Yep.
And a Klipsch center speaker, which is good because, you know, the front stage is all the same.
Yep. It's going to
match. All the tweeters are pretty much on the same level.
Nice.
Yeah, which is great. But what was my point here to this? what the hell was I getting at?
We started at speaker grill cloth, and you were going across.
Oh yeah, so I'm sorry.
On. Yep.
So why I keep them on? I have three grandchildren, and
exact protection.
To not be, you know, because a lot of times, you know, my grandkids, I want to go downstairs. Well, you can't go down there, you know, but then I'm the bad guy, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
I end up taking them down here. They can, you know, play around, but I got to be careful because for some reason, you know how kids are, that cone, that dust cone, whatever it is, they have to put their finger through it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So,
exactly.
But, yeah, that's not
a
big deal. But I actually like the way they look with the grills on them.
Yeah.
But I'm sometimes I'll feel like taking them off, so. But Klipsch, you got to be careful because they have that copper cones in there. And I don't know. I mean, I liked it at first, but I'm kind of getting sick of it. the orange copper, whatever it is.
They are impressive looking, but yeah. I could see. I guess I've never owned a pair to have them that long. But I could see getting tired of seeing that and wanting to see something fresh. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
But it's almost like too much power for this room, but. You know, what are we talking about, right? Who cares?
Once you calibrate it, you're all set.
Yeah. All set. All right, so that, I can scratch the grills off that on the notes. Let's see what else. I mean,
I feel like I'm being interrogated here.
Oh no, no, I just
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, it's fun though. It's like so like in your overall question of like what are my settings like top secret? It's not that they're top secret. It's that they're irrelevant.
I know everybody's room is different.
Right. They're irrelevant.
Right.
And it's like, I've had people ask me that about my projector as well. I've had people text me that have this or email me that have the same projector. And they're like, can you let me know your projector settings? And I was like, I can, but I'm not sure it'll necessarily work because
I'll have to kill you.
No, no, no. It's more like I can do a screen grab of everything I have set up, but that doesn't necessarily, I don't know what room they're in. It, you know, these settings might not work. Not
yeah,
to
the lighting
the fact,
and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact, I don't know how far away your projector is from your screen.
Yeah.
I don't know how big your screen is. It's, these settings are so, all these settings in for everything in our room, not just the projector, they're all unique to that room.
Right.
And that's why, you know, so like even my projector, like what kind of screen you have, how big is your screen? How far away is the projector? How much light do you have in the room? What do you literally
so much
prefer,
goes into it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then take on top of that, all of those settings that I would send somebody would be, those are just the settings that I can control, but each of those settings has been professionally calibrated behind the scenes
for your room.
Right. So it's, that's why it's like, it's not that our settings are top secret or anything like that. It's just, they're unique to your room.
They mean nothing to someone else, right?
Yeah. They could actually make your room worse.
Right. It's the same for TVs.
Right.
You know
exactly.
what I mean? You can't go on YouTube and these are the, because I've seen videos on YouTube for the same like same model TV you have. Oh, these are the settings you should use. Well, that's not true.
How far away you know? Are you sitting? What angle are you sitting at?
Where's I actually find...
Where's this? Where's
right.
that? It's like, I don't know.
Right.
And it's
but a lot of people go by that, and they end up using those settings, and like you said, it makes it look worse.
Right. Or they think that's what's supposed to be. And then they'll go someplace else and be like, how come yours looks so much better? Or how come yours looks so much worse? Or, and then there's a preference too. I mean, just like you said, it's like for the TV settings, I sit in my living, my TV's mounted in the corner of the room and I sit obviously not directly in front of it because it's in the corner. I'd have to take my couch and put it across the room, like diagonally in the room. So my couch, I am literally, anywhere you sit to look at a TV mounted in the corner is almost off center. You're always slightly off center. So how does that look to you wherever you're sitting? Those settings might not, you know, you might want it just slightly bright. It depends on the TV. It depends on, you know, what's off angle viewing like? How far off are you? There's so many things. That's just one aspect of it. So, it's the experience that you have in your room. And what I would say is like, just go listen to other stuff. Like you said, with, the Suicide Squad, the reason you knew that was wrong is you heard that scene before correctly. And you were like, how do I get my room to sound like that?
Mm-hmm. And one little setting made all the difference in the world.
Exactly. And it's like John and I talk about, it's like he's in last week's podcast. He's like, it never dawned on him to take and upmix everything to Neural X. And he's like, let me try that. And it's like him and I talk all the time. And it was in a podcast that I happened to be mentioning it, not telling him to do that. I was just saying, I upmix. And it in his head, he was like, oh, I've never done that. Let me try that. And that's what's fun about conversations with all of these different people. Everybody's getting different ideas from everybody.
Yeah.
So
about the Neural X setting.
Yeah.
That you brought that up. On my receiver, I have the Neural X setting, the Dolby Surround setting.
Mm-hmm.
But I found like even with DTS:X.
Yeah.
I actually have to change my layout on my speaker arrangement to from top middle to front heights to get the DTS-X overheads to work.
Really?
And I was just, yeah, I have to change them from top middle, which is Atmos. I leave it on top middle for the ceiling speakers. And I have to change it to front heights to get the DTS-X. And I'm curious that when I up, because I up mix to Neuralex as well, but now I'm wondering if I just press the button on a remote and it shifts to Neuralex, or do I have to do the, because I really don't hear too much from above when I do that, and I'm wondering if I had it set to front heights, would it change? And you know, I'm actually gonna leave it alone, but.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be a question for Rob, for sure.
Yeah.
He would know, like, he'd know, he'd break down your entire receiver, the manual of your receiver and everything.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's probably just that receiver that does that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I know on both my Denon and now the Marantz, they're exactly the same, the way I change, because now I have Oral 3D, and I have an option to do that. And
now you just show it off.
No, well, aren't we all? but no, and I've tried it. I haven't really messed around too much with it, but yet.
Right.
But it's the exact same process. I do it all from the app in my room on the phone, and I just go on and I click and boom, 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 and I can jump in and out. And mostly everything now is I've set it, and so for everything that comes on, like if it's not Atmos, it'll go to Neuralex. If it's not, and if it, or DTS-X. DTS-X plays automatically. Atmos plays automatically. Yeah. Everything else I've programmed to go to DTS Neuralex.
And that's the same thing with the why I wanted to talk about the Panasonic, because the Sony, I think it's like a 700. You know, it was back when I got it, it was I think it was $200. Yep. But that, every time you put in Adobe Vision movie, you have to go in and manually change the setting on it. With a Panasonic, you know, it automatically outputs the best resolution, HDR, or whatever. You don't have to manually change it every time you put Adobe Vision disc in there.
Right. So if that's the case, I don't use Dolby Vision on my Panasonic because I'm running a projector. So I wouldn't know if that's the case, but I have heard that. I've heard Rob say that. So that would be worth the upgrade for you. The 820, where that's the big upgrade to me is the running into a projector where it has the HDR optimizer in it.
Yes.
And that was the game changer, because I was running the Oppo 203 and my projector guy's like, buy this. And that was the one that I made, the 7 o'clock in the morning, I get a text, buy this. And he sent me a link for somebody selling it for a Panasonic 820 for $350. So it cost me $380 with shipping, and I bought it. But like, he texted me at 7, and at like 7:10, I go, okay, what did I just buy? And he's like, let me know when it's in and I'll tell you what to do. And when it came in, it was like the next week it came in. I go, all right, what do I do? And he showed me how to set up the HDR optimizer. Mm-hmm. And he goes, that's going to, you know, it's going to help you with your,
because it has a projector setting, right?
Yeah, it has a setting, and at the time I was only running a 1080p projector, so he's like, it helped me optimize that to get the most out of my projector then. And then when I went to 4K, it actually optimizes that, the HDR for that, and that's why I was getting a better image on that than I was on streaming. And that, you know, that was one of those things where I was like, now I did all the research and I kept looking, how do I get what I'm getting from my Panasonic? How do I get that on everything? And I couldn't find a way to do it. I tried to find even like $1,000 way, a $500 way. And it was, everything came back to, you know, Lumigen or, you know, Mad VR. And I was like, well, I can't afford a $15,000 Mad VR. So I was, you know, I ended up going with the Lumigen, and that gives me, for all intents and purposes, Dolby Vision on everything.
So, right.
Through a projector. So that's, but that's very similar to your, the Suicide Squad experience. It's like, I'm seeing how great my discs are. And I'm like, why is everything looking, what is going, how do I get that Apple TV? How do I get this HDR content to look like it does on the discs? And it was just so blocky and so much, but there was no setting that, I wish Apple TV came out with a setting like that where it could optimize HDR for different things. That would be a cool setting for Apple TV to come out with. Then,
yeah,
you know, you wouldn't need to, you know, people with projectors wouldn't need that, but projectors are such a small market. I don't know if Apple's interested in doing stuff like that.
Yeah, the Illumigen pretty much fixed all that, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then perfect. Beyond. Yeah, it's, yeah, like I said, it's like having Dolby Vision for everything.
Yeah.
Whether it has Dolby Vision or not. Because right. That's what it's doing. It's tone mapping everything for particularly for the projector. So, for.
Yeah. And what I found with the display I have now, the Sony, I believe, X700 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to freeze up on 100 gigabyte discs.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And that's so frustrating,
isn't it?
You know what I mean? And
yeah, I don't think you'll have that with the Panasonic. The Panasonic's pretty rock solid.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, I don't want to have to go through that. You know.
Right. So,
especially when you have somebody here and you're in the middle of something, and then you're like, and then you have to go 30 minutes ahead. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
No. So that's probably that's the next item I'm looking at.
That's a great point. That's one of the reasons that I think, and everybody gets mad at Disney for only putting out a 66 gigabyte disc, but that's the reason I think they do it is because they're trying to produce for the masses. Most people don't have a $500, $400 disc player that can run 100 gigabyte disc smoothly. So if they put these discs out at a 66 gigabyte disc, that's only two layers. Where you're having problems on 100 gigabyte disc is when it's shooting to the third layer. So that it, on the cheaper players, they're having
to, read it. Yeah,
it's hiccuping, and then and when any of these electronics hiccup, you know what happened? They just panic and shut down. So that's a theory on my part on why Disney only puts out 66 gigabyte discs is I think because most of the people, probably 95% of the people that buy their discs, are putting them into a $100, $200 disc player.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, makes sense.
So why am I going to keep putting out these discs that are just going to keep shutting down on people? People are going to be more frustrated with that than the lack of quality if they went to a 100 disc, right?
Right.
So, and that's the only thing I can think of and why they consistently do the 66 gig. It makes sense to me. That makes sense. And I think it makes business sense on their part too. So, you know, cause then now they're putting out a nice consistent product, you know what you're getting and
right.
You know,
no hiccups.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, it is frustrating, but we're lucky. And I mean, if you can get the 820, you should be, I haven't heard any issues of that. I haven't heard any issues of the 100 gig.
No, before I purchase anything, you know, especially with this hobby, I always like to do my homework over,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, do you know how long I researched the Marantz and I didn't research the Marantz. More about this on Friday, but I was just researching upgrading and now I end up at the Marantz, you know? So it's like, but that's part of the fun to me. That's part of the adventure. And then once you get it, now you're like, that fun's over. Now you just get to experience
it. On to the next thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, that's kind of the
what's
fun.
What's the model number on that?
The 7706. 7706.
Was that last year's or is that this year's?
It's actually, I think it might even be 2 years old. Just because of the pandemic and everything, there hasn't been a lot.
Right.
I think it is last year's because it does have one 2.1, you know, input. HDMI input. But that doesn't bother me because I don't run anything at that level. I don't run video games at that level. My projector doesn't take that level. So that doesn't really bother me. I would, if they come out with another one next year, like a Marant, and it would be a sideward step, but had more, I may upgrade to it. I'll sell that and then upgrade to that just to get to see if that helps with my HDMI switching. Like when you switch from one to the next, my screen freezes and I have to wait for the projector to reboot. But if you can, I think I'd need a new projector for that too, to upgrade to a projector with a 2.1 input. But I think you'd get more instantaneous flip when you're flipping formats and stuff.
It doesn't sound like that big of a deal, really.
It's not.
And I remember you saying that, it's an improvement on what you had with the Denon, but it wasn't that big of an improvement. But certain aspects of it.
Yeah, and like I said, I'll talk more Friday, but it's a definite improvement. It's bigger than I expected, but in the grand scheme of things, once you're up in this level, it's minimal improvements. You know what I mean? Like you're talking, from a good Denon, a good upper end. I mean, that's an 11, the X6300H is an 11.1 channel receiver. It has all the channels in it, right? And it runs, sounded really good. Now, I was expecting a 1% increase. I think I got 2-3% increase because it's really interesting how much better it is. And running, I mean, what is it? You know, because you hear everybody tell you, like, you'll hear a lot of people like, separates don't make a difference. You don't need it. Well, no kidding. We don't need any of this. But I was surprised at how much of a difference it really does make, how much cleaner it is.
Well, aren't they associated with each other, Marantz and Denon?
Oh, same company. Marantz, it's the same company. And as far as like it's always been like thought of like the Denon is the poor man's Marantz. It's like the Marantz is supposed to be the refined version of Denon. That's the way
I remember Marantz when I was a teenager. I had a pair of Marantz speakers. Yeah, they've been around forever.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna talk about that on Friday. That's like it's kind of fun for me right now. Dream come true type thing. Piece.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It does make a difference. I think where I say, and this is what, and I think you'd recognize this too, being in the hobby for so long, most people would never hear the difference. It takes time to hear these differences. It takes time with product to hear these differences. Like, I had my Denon for probably, probably 4 or 5 years, I think. I can't remember when I got it. It's got to be 4 years, right? So 4 years of listening to content through that. And then you go to something else and you'd be like, okay, but everything else in the room is exactly the same. Speakers are the same. Everything's the same, right? But you go to a different input for it. That's how you hear the difference. That's how you can learn how the differences are. And again, I'll talk about this on Friday. Me and Johnny Speakers are actually talking about the same thing right now. He's going backwards in a direction just because of what's going on in his home. And he's hearing the difference. And like I said, it's really interesting stuff. But it takes time to get there. It takes a lot. You can't just come into the hobby and listen to one thing and then listen to the other and A/B it in the same room and be like, oh yeah, that one's better. Be like, one, you don't know which is correct. So how do you know which is better? You might know which one you like, but you don't know which one is correct or that. And then that's how we do stuff. So
yeah, sometimes you wish you weren't so meticulous about these things. You know what I mean? You can just be satisfied with something. You know what I mean? But when you get there, it lights you up, you know?
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. It does. It lights you up. It gets you excited. And it's like, I don't ever wish I wasn't as meticulous. Well, I can't say that. There are times I wish I wasn't as... I wish I could calm down a little bit and just sit back and enjoy.
No.
But at the same time, again, that's something else. The reason I chose the Marantz that is you know, and I'll talk about on Friday. There's a part of this that there were other options I could have gone with that maybe they might be better, but not for me. And there's reasons for that. And a lot of like what you just said and a lot of the stuff that we do and that we like to do. And it's like, you know, like, what do I really want to do in this room? I want to watch my content. And that's right. That's why I went with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're almost so busy just chasing that.
Exactly.
That goal, you know, you kind of miss out on why we're doing this in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So you always got to make time for that.
Yeah. And that's the sole purpose of it. And honestly, that's what's happened with me and doing the breakdowns of every movie like I was doing. That's what the podcast was.
Yeah, you really got to get back on that.
I know. But what was happening is I was spending less time watching content than I was watching content, but it was the same content. So I was missing. I wasn't getting to watch as much as.
But back then it was once a week. You didn't have the Tuesday show back then.
Correct. Right.
And it was just Friday.
It was once a week. I was also recording my other podcast too, the chat one with my buddy John, which was a comics podcast.
I don't care about that one.
Yeah, I know.
But that just made Friday that much better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I know. And I'm going to get back to that. But now it's like, now I'm excited to get, I'm getting chills thinking about it, looking at my,
I'm looking at my notes and I'm actually, I've got so many requests for movies for you to break down, but.
That's the other, honestly, Mike, that's a great, tell me, give me some from your list. I don't know how many you have there. You can give them all.
I kind of did like everybody does, the best movies for Atmos, mm-hmm. What's my favorites, and I have a few scenes, a couple of movies that it's pretty much the entire movie, like Pacific Rim, entire movie.
We did that
it's
one.
Just,
yeah, I did that
you know,
one.
It, yep. Yeah, you did that one.
Yep. It is.
It's same thing with...
That was a hard one to do. And I said that in the podcast. I go, I don't know. I actually redid on how I presented that podcast because I used to have every stamp and I knew what I was like. I had an idea on what I was going to say. But when I do a podcast on a movie like that, I like to have kind of a theme. And it's like, this movie did this for me. So I kind of want it to be almost like I'm going to break down these scenes, but I also want it to be entertaining. And like, I'm kind of telling a story here. And with this one, with Pacific Rim, I just felt like I watched that movie twice to try and get, and I stamped out my scenes, watched it again. And I'm like trying to figure out, what am I going to say here? How do I make this movie entertaining and not, how do I break it down in an entertaining way without sounding like Chris Farley and like, remember this scene? Yeah, that was really loud. Remember this scene? Oh, wow. Great bass. And it's like, you'd be saying the same thing every single time.
Right.
And it was that movie that I go, look, I'm going to break this down and we're just going to go through it. And I'm going to tell you what I see. And this is how we're going to go. And that was fun to do. But then it also kind of a light bulb went off in my head too, and is that when I used to break down movies, I used to break down stuff that we all know, right? We all know these great scenes. But now I kind of want to get back to, and I think the listeners have responded to it, some of the stuff that you miss. Those are where I get the most comments. It's like, I didn't even hear that. That was cool. Or how? So I'm actually looking for stuff that you don't always hear, that you don't always, like, we all know the big explosions in Endgame, but do you notice the part where, like, you hear something shoot by on the right side that you're like, I didn't even know, what is that? And then you look on the screen and it's like, look at that. I see something going by and I didn't even know what that was. It's not the main part of the scene. So it's little things like that. I'm trying to look for the little things and okay, bring speaking something of, more. Go ahead.
Speaking of little things, right? So I have... After Pacific Rim, I have Dune, entire movie.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's just phenomenal.
Yep. That's going to get broken down.
So the Batman,
Yep, that definitely is going to get broken down.
Right, but there's the car chase, which is the, you know.
Yeah, I've broken that one down for all intents and purposes with Ralph.
But there's also a couple of scenes in that the Batman movie that I wanted to mention, and I'm sure of all people you picked up on this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a grapple hook scene.
Yep.
When he goes. He goes back into the Iceberg Lounge.
Yeah.
As Bruce Wayne, and he cuts out the power.
Yeah.
When the Catwoman is trying to shoot her father, right?
Yeah.
So after he cuts out the power, he, you know, changes into his bat costume, and then he shoots the bat, the bat hook, right?
Yeah.
He shoots it. At, you know, like going up, and I actually can hear it in my room as clear as day, go from the front left to the ceiling left to the ceiling right where it lands. And it's fucking phenomenal. I'm sorry, but excuse my language. I watched it with a buddy, and I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, but then I had to rewind it. Yeah. But that's, I mean, as far as Atmos, that it's just, you know, a great example of the directional, you know, with the speakers, crazy good. But that's for sound. But there's a scene in there as well, as far as video, and I know you like these things too.
Mm.
When him and the commissioner after the car chase, and they kind of interrogate the Penguin. Well, I didn't kill no Goyle. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they go into the orphanage, right?
Yep.
And that's where their projector's running.
Yeah.
So he walks through the projector, okay? And now you're looking at Batman from the front, and the projector's over his right shoulder.
Yeah.
And as he's breathing, you see the smoke from his breath. It's red, it's blue, it's yellow. It's crazy.
Coming through the projector light, right?
It's the lighting from the projector behind him. And his breath is like a rainbow.
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, I got to write this down. And I know you've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what you're talking about. These little things.
Yeah.
That just, you know, just the cherry on top. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And those are the little things that, one, your OLED's pulling out, you know, that lot of people aren't noticing.
Right.
That's very similar to it's almost exactly the same thing that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago with Lucy. In that one scene where Morgan Freeman, the projector's in front of him and the light's coming through the hair on the lower left side of his head. You're looking at the back of his head and you're seeing that rainbow effect come through his hair, and his hair is like kind of glowing in these different, same idea, but it's like, it's those little things that you're like, that's what's fun about HDR. That's what's fun about, you know, having that great image and HDR being able to allow those images, those colors to be that vibrant and pop through so that you're just like, oh my God. And then the idea of, like you said, like it's his breath, you know, that's just, it's awesome details, but
yeah. And it's job, and find it every
great
time,
job.
Every time I watch the Batman, I end up liking it even more.
Oh.
You know, when I went and saw it at the theater, I went with like six, seven other people. And I think maybe two of us liked it.
Yeah.
You know, it's too long, you know, not enough action. I thought it was a fantastic movie. And I thought he played a great part.
I thought he...
Hats off to him.
He's my favorite Batman because it's because of the story. And
story.
I just watched Batman Begins, and that's a phenomenal movie as well.
Yep. Underrated.
I love Batman Begins. I love the way... I love that his origin story there. I love, you know, Christian Bale, the way, you know, Liam Neeson and it just Morgan Freeman in that as well.
Yeah,
all of this stuff I thought was, it's just so well done, but the story, it's a great origin story. That's my favorite part of Batman Begins, is seeing him learn and seeing him in the training stuff and how he became Batman. But what I've always wanted, and what John and I have been talking about for years, is we just want a really good Batman detective story on the big screen that we have in the comics. And what Matt Reeves did here with this, and being able to take for all intents and purposes, he took two of my favorite Batman comics, long, you know, comics.
Halloween
and Hush.
Yep.
And you put those two, basically intertwined those together to make this movie. And if you've read both of those books, you're still entertained in this movie, because I've read both of those and I'm still entertained, because you're not exactly sure what's going to happen. But
how often does that happen? Yeah,
it's so good. But I understand why people don't like it, because they're not into it. They're not into that. Whereas my daughter saw it with her fiance like 2 weeks after I saw it, and she came out of it. She called me on her way home and she's like, I wanted it to be longer, Dad, because she really got into it. And she has that passion through me for the comics, for the stories. She gets into this stuff because of the way I have been with her and pointing stuff out. So she pays attention to this stuff.
Right.
And that's how I felt at the end of the Batman. I'm like, I kind of want, believe it or not, I wanted an extended version. I don't know where they would extend, because it doesn't look like they left anything out.
Right. It seemed like it was almost extended already.
Exactly. But my point in saying that isn't to say that I want more, that I need more. My point is I was thoroughly entertained the whole time that I was upset that I wasn't being entertained anymore by this movie, because it's just that good. And like you said, it's like every time you go, like every time you watch it, you're just more entertained. You're having so much fun. It's a hard movie. You get Shawshanked. This is, you know, Shawshank's the original. That's the one where you go back and you put it on and you can't stop watching. This is just like that. It's like somebody will send me a scene, like, I'm going to go watch what you just spoke about, right? And I'll probably finish the movie from there, because I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
You can't just watch one scene, right?
No, you can't. And it is. It's that good of a piece. And honestly, the longer we go, I just keep saying, I mean, we're in August now, for all intents and purposes. We're into August, and it's my movie of the year. I can't think of another movie that's come out this year that's better.
That's
everything keeps getting compared to it and losing when it comes out.
Yeah. Well, another, there is a sequel coming out, right? I've heard.
Yep. They are making, probably not for another 2 years. I think they actually did come out with a time for it, too.
I can't wait for that.
I can't remember. Yeah. Same with Doom. But I can't wait for that sequel too. That's in 2 years. That's I want to say Christmas, December of 20.
2 years, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's either December of 24, or it might be it's got to be December of 24 for Dune. It's got to be. So that'd be 3 years since it came out. So that would be nice.
That's fantastic. Another Matt Reeves movie, that it's an older one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I say older, it's not that old, but War of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep. I want to break those down too.
I'm telling you, I just watched this the other night.
Yeah.
And my God, the picture on that, the sound is phenomenal, especially the last 40 minutes when Caesar is escaping and he blows up the whole camp there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the avalanche. I mean, God, it's so good.
The rumbles. It's.
Oh, it's fantastic. But that's Matt Reeves as well, right? He did those, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he did did a couple of them. I think he did. Yeah,
I think he did the. I don't know if he did first one.
I thought there was one he didn't do. I can't remember. But I do know
I think
that
he did.
He did a bunch of those.
Because I got the set. I think he did Dawn of Planet of the Apes, and War for Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
He didn't do Rise, I don't think.
Okay.
Did you know, all right, here's a fun fact. You probably already know it anyway, but James Cameron is using high frame rate.
Yes.
For Avatar and Titanic. You heard that?
Yes.
I figured you did.
I did hear that. Kind of excited for it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with that. I don't know.
So here's the thing. What cracks me up is the people that get mad. Like, why are you mad? You already have it in one format. It's not gonna delete what you already have. So if he wants to try to engage us, people like us, in something new and find a way to get people to be like, excited about his product or his art. So
yeah, but couldn't you achieve that on like motion settings? Because when you have
so you're saying put it, so instead of him producing that, just to throw on your motion.
Yeah, because if you buy this at a high frame rate, you can't knock that down. You can't.
No.
It's like Gemini Man, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Right. So yeah, the problem is if you're doing like that, if you're creating by getting rid of the motion blur or whatever on your settings on your television, which, you know, people tell you not to use. You shouldn't use.
Right.
You should use,
right,
you know, whatever it comes in. Tom Cruise and Martin Scorsese did a whole campaign. Like, that's where they came up with the, what is it, the cinema or is it director's view or whatever it is for televisions. But the idea is, if you do add that to your television, you're actually messing with the image, and you can create like artifacting and stuff. So you
and
ruin the image.
Yep.
When you do it like Gemini Man, like Ang Lee did with that in the long halftime walk, I think.
Which I've never seen.
You're getting a true, you know, 60 frames per second. You're getting a cleaner image. I love it. I think it's great. I don't want it all the time, but I think it looks.
It's something to something to enjoy, because there's not much of it out there.
Exactly. Yeah. It's something different. So I think with Titanic and Avatar, it's just a new way to engage the audience. And I wouldn't be surprised if this might all be a prelude. I keep saying it, and it's because I'm hoping. It's
I know where you're going with this.
Passive 3D. I think
on the new one. Yeah,
the HDR, 60 frames per second. Is that what we're going to be getting? Is that what we're going to be seeing?
You know? Yeah, like that might be a sneak peek. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm more excited for Avatar in 60 frames than I am for Titanic.
Right.
But I am excited for the presentation of Titanic. I think that's another movie that's, especially for home theater people, it's sneaky good. And I say that because it's so much a love story. But at the same time, they open the movie with the tech of the idea of Bill Paxton diving, taking the boat. You know, so you have all that tech part, and then you have obviously the love story in the middle, and then the boat, spoilers, the boat sinks at the end. That scene, that the everything going into that is just awesome home theater stuff, right?
And yeah, then it's epic, like 60. big epic. Yep.
I think where the 60 frames per second might be most fun for that movie is the historical aspect of going through the boat in those middle scenes when they're actually in the dining halls, and you're actually giving you that feel of being on the Titanic, you know, and knowing and getting a feel of maybe this is what it was like to be there. I don't know. I'm engaged. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah, that's an automatic pickup right there. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I have Avatar on Blu-ray, and it looks phenomenal on Blu-ray, because it helps with the OLED display. But
yeah,
I have it looks Blu-ray, and sounds great.
I have it on 3D. The 3D is great.
Yeah.
Kind of looking forward to a 4K. So we'll see.
Yeah, where is The Abyss? Right, which isn't even on Blu-ray, huh?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope, they don't. Yeah, that I have my cop special edition DVD, but that doesn't look very good.
Right, and what's the other one? True Lies is another one, right?
Those are the two biggies that anytime Cameron's name's mentioned, that's where it's like he could say like, "Oh, went out to eat today. I had a sub, you know, steak and cheese sub and a Diet Coke." Oh yeah, where's True Lies in the Abyss? That's what everybody says.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Like,
stop eating your lunch and put out True Lies in the Abyss. Okay.
Right. Come on.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some other, what other requests? And I'll get to my answer on requests.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, which I just watched last night.
Yep. Really?
And that's pretty much the whole movie. I mean, picture and sound, incredible.
Yep. So, Mike, right? Let me ask you this. This was going to be in Friday's show, but I'll deal with this here. Mike, this is, I'm asking this question on behalf of G. Cornell. What did you think of the dialogue in Ghostbusters Afterlife? How was it? Was it hard for you to hear it? Was it, and I don't know your answer here, so.
Mm-mm. I don't recall having an issue with it.
Okay.
You know?
So, G. Cornell sent me an email, and he found it to be not a reference disc. Let me see if I can pull up the Ghostbusters Afterlife. There we go. There it is. So I'll do this here because you brought it up. And so G. Cornell says, in my dedicated home theater, brought up a non-action dialogue scene and adjusted the volume so dialogue sounded natural, comfortable, decent volume. Clearly heard. Wouldn't want it louder. A good volume throughout for dialogue scenes. But, DJ, for action scenes with jacked up music and explosions, the volume increase is way too much in relationship to the dialogue scenes. Had to lower master volume 8 dB to avoid being blasted out of the room and hearing damage. Not my idea of a properly mixed film. So, I have my answer. What would you say to G. Cornell?
I would check his settings.
Okay.
I mean, I had no issue with, you know, action being louder than dialogue. Everything seemed to be, you know, properly where it needed to be. Maybe his levels on his speakers are too high, or
cue thing.
Yeah.
So my thing is, and this is what I wanted to say. G. Cornell, great guy. I go back and forth with him pretty much daily, I think. And yeah. I think he knows more than I do. And in my opinion, he's doing this to test me.
This is a test. Yeah.
He's done that. And I think he's done that to me in the past. He'll ask me some questions and I'll be like, wait, what? And then he'll answer me with people that he's talked to. And he goes, that's a good answer. This guy said this, this, and this. And I'm like, he's testing me. This guy's so playing, smart. Yeah. Right. So what I would say, and I actually gave this advice to somebody on HT Tours recently. He had dialogue issues. I would say before you get to room EQ, I would say it's room treatments. Most people that have issues with dialogue in their room when they're playing at a louder, you know, closer to reference level, it's your room treatments. So what happens is if you don't have enough room treatment in your room and sounds are bouncing everywhere and you're getting
echo. Yeah.
Yeah. You're getting everything to your ear, but it could be so delayed because it's been bouncing and those high frequencies are still going around in the room. And this is milliseconds, so it doesn't take much. And what happens is like what you were saying about, you know, the Suicide Squad and your bass,
yeah,
is even at the higher frequency, you're not getting a clean, your ears aren't getting a clean read off of that center channel because what's coming out of your center channel is bouncing around the room, and that's going to affect everything, not just your dialogue, yeah, but your perception of pans, your perception of things around,
yeah,
moving,
yeah,
around the room.
Things are crossing, things yeah, are crossing over each other, yeah.
So I would say there, and just the idea that you would set the volume by listening to a dialogue scene and then watch the movie, it's like, that's why they have, that's what's so great. I was just saying this to my son on a completely different topic. I watch my movies at reference level always. And then, especially on first viewing, but my son goes in and plays video games and he watches it, plays his video games at a loud volume, but it's like minus 30 dB. But that's because video games, they're not made to reference volume. You know what I mean? Like reference has a set of standards that movies are trying. They're trying to produce it at that. It's the most accurate, probably, production out there. Cause sound, like, music industry doesn't use any kind of reference. Obviously video games don't, they want it louder and obnoxious for the kids because that's what the kids like. So, and I'm not saying the reference volume on movies is awesome. I'm not saying it's like like the be all end all, but it is the most accurate from, because everybody else is so inaccurate, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the video game people use the headphones a lot of times anyway.
Exactly. Good point. And so, like, that's what, so he's like, I turn it down to this. I don't know how, you know, but he watches movies with me at reference volume, and he's like, it's not like when you're watching a video game. So if your room is calibrated, and that's the other thing, if your room is calibrated right, if I watch it reference volume in my room and I have the proper room treatments, and I go anywhere else and I watch it in reference volume there, it should be relatively the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea of reference volume. It's like you're it, that's the reference. So the fact that you have to turn it back to hear, you know, because, but now your dialogue is less, but you're, I think that sounds to me like one, like you said, you were right. Room EQ, your room correction is, there's something going on there, but also it's, you're probably your room treatments, and it's something that the room EQ, whether it's Odyssey, I think he runs Dirac in his room. Mm. Whatever it is, something isn't being able to compensate, because that can only compensate so much. It can't.
And I wonder if it's only that movie, because, like I said, I didn't have a problem with that movie. He's got to be experiencing this with several movies, I would think.
Right, right. So I don't, but that would be my guess, G. Cornell. So you got an early one there, because, you know, Mike, great example of him. I think it's a reference disc. It's a great disc. And I'm not the only one. Larry loves it too. From SBS, he uses
fantastic.
He uses it as a demo scene. So, I love that disc, and that'll be one that I'm going to break down. I typically try to break down movies that are at least a year old. So, if the Batman just came out, I'll break down a scene here and there, and that's what's fun about the new format of the show is I can actually talk about a particular scene without having to break down the whole movie. But then, next year, when the Batman is a year old, that's probably going to be, anniversary date of the movie. Here's the breakdown.
Right.
But because I like the idea, and I get a lot of feedback on this, I love being able to give you a movie that you're going to pull off the shelf, or maybe you haven't really.
Oh, I've done that several times.
You know, like several older times. Movies that it's just fun to be like, you know, and movies and that we're not typically watching.
Well, so funny story, you had recently, I think it was last week's podcast on Friday with your sidekick there, and you had mentioned, John. You were doing John, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So you were doing a coming soon, or, you know, new releases coming out.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a slow week, but you had mentioned the movie The Gamer, and you said, oh, that might be one I'm picking up. That seems to be right up my alley. Well, hopefully you hadn't bought it yet, because I bought it.
Uh-oh.
And it's garbage.
Oh, really?
So what happened was, I had to special order it from the store I go to. They got it in. I paid $20.99 for it. So I pop it in. It on the display, you know, I read the numbers on it and see what it's playing at. It doesn't have Dolby Vision, no HDR10, just straight regular HDR, which is non-existent, by the way. Everything looks washed out.
Yeah.
And on the disc player, the info, it showed up 4K, 24 frames per second, SDR, not HDR, SDR. So it's an upscale, it's not even true 4K.
Okay.
And a movie that like that, which would have benefited with an Atmos track, has only a 5.1.
Right.
And it's slightly above average at best. And, you know, I've never seen the movie before, but kind of a lot of vulgar, unnecessary nudity. I don't know if you've seen it, but.
No, I haven't. But yeah, wow.
It's rated R.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it, put it that way.
All right. I won't. Wow.
And I think I actually...
Gerard Butler, right?
Yes. Well, and that's the reason I picked it up. I said, oh, that's... I've never seen that. And I watched the trailer, and it looked great. I said, oh, I got to pick that up. And that's when I ordered it.
That's but too no, bad.
That's going right in the recycle bin.
Ah.
You know?
That's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah, sorry, FYI.
Yeah, all right. Hey, good to hear.
Take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, no, I'm, yeah, I believe you. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But this
doesn't happen often, but.
I got one. John and I are going to do actually a pretty good breakdown this week. We're watching, you know, I'll put it out now since we're towards the end here. Friday's show, we're doing King Arthur. Do you remember that movie?
Of course, yes, with
2004.
Yeah, Charlie and Jude Law's in it.
No, it's not Jude Law. It's
yeah,
Jude Law.
The king. Yeah, he plays the bad guy.
Does he? Did I miss?
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam's in it, right?
No, this is 2004, and it's got Clive Owen, Keira Knightley.
Oh, okay, that's all right. Yeah, so you're talking about. The King Arthur, the most recent one. Legend of the Sword or something like that.
Legend of the Sword. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one's actually in Dolby Atmos. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So have you seen
King Arthur? You're talking about, I never heard. No, I haven't seen that
one. Okay. That was from 2004.
Wow.
It's only in HD. It's a Blu-ray. And we both have it. And we're like, oh, let's do it. It's a pretty good movie. So we're going to be we're gonna be breaking that one down. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer. He's the producer. So
kind of random.
Yeah,
kind of random.
Exactly. Huh? That's the point. So I had a lot of fun with it. I really liked it. So I can't wait to see what he thought. But it's from 2004. Cool. The video's a little dated, a little sneak peek. It's just in HD. It's not in it's no HDR or anything like that. But
right. What about the audio?
You'll have to hear Friday.
Okay.
See?
Okay. That's yep.
Big market tease there, Mike.
I'm going to listen anyway, so.
I know. I enjoyed the audio. It's DTS Master Audio 5.1, upmixed, obviously, with Neuralax. But it was fun. It was some good stuff in there. Good stuff.
Have you seen Power Rangers?
No. No, I didn't go that far.
No. I think the Power Rangers, the most recent one. With Bryan Cranston, right? He's in it. I think it's one of the first discs to have Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos when the 4K format started.
Oh.
And it's definitely a reference. The movie's kind of silly, you know. I mean, Power Rangers, but
yeah.
The picture and the sound are phenomenal.
Yeah, it's got Dolby Atmos. What year is that from? I don't know.
Geez.
But yeah, it's in 4K, Dolby Atmos. But does that have a
Dolby Vision?
Yeah, Bryan Cranston's in it. Naomi Scott, Elizabeth Banks is in it.
Yeah, she plays. It's not a bad movie. If you haven't seen it, you might want to put it on your list.
Maybe it's a rental. I got rented on Kaleidoscape for $8. Maybe I'll do
it for.
Now,
I thought you said they don't have Dolby Vision on that, right?
No, but I don't use Dolby Vision anyways.
Oh, that's true. You got Dolby Vision no matter what.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that what you said?
Yep. Yep.
And you know, honestly, I don't know how much of a difference that makes either.
Oh, it does.
I mean,
Dolby Vision is good. It's like, it's, you know what? My favorite analogy to tell people on that is like, remember the days when you used to go to MapQuest and they'd print out your directions on a piece of paper? And you'd have to drive from New Hampshire to New York, and you'd have to read that piece of paper and how slow that took. So that's like regular HDR. And then Dolby Vision is like having it in your dash and telling you turn by turn directions on every step.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's that drastic. HDR 10.
HDR 10 Plus is the same thing as Dolby Vision. It's just a
different, I know that. So, different version. But isn't Dolby Vision, I mean, isn't that like a 12-bit color wheel to get its full potential? And the TVs nowadays are only...
Yeah, that depends on your television and stuff like that. But as far as HDR goes, it's that what Dolby Vision's doing is telling your television... If you have a Dolby Vision television and a Dolby Vision source, what's happening is it's telling the television frame by every frame of this movie or show is being told exactly where the darkest point is and
right,
where the
right.
lightest point is. HDR10 is just saying, okay, in this particular
the whole screen. Yeah.
No, this particular scene that you might get to a bright scene later on, but that's going to be the brightest, and it maps it to that. So it's basically telling me
the tone mapping.
Right. So Dolby Vision is a nicer map. It's a cleaner map from beginning to end of the movie on how your display should be showing the brightest and the darkest image on that scene at the same time. So that's what Dolby Vision is doing. And HDR10 is just a more rudimentary version that's not as refined. That's all. And that's the only, you know. So you are going to get, there is an advantage to Dolby Vision and HDR 10 plus for the displays that can take advantage of that. So, it's all good. You know, HDR is good. Yeah. HDR 10 is good, but there is an advantage to the uptick of HDR 10 plus and HDR and Dolby Vision. So,
there's another, Morbius, which I really liked. The inside the ship, the opening, not the opening scene, but early in the movie, when he's turning into the vampire, turning into Morbius, and he's killing, you know, that's great sound there.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That,
and there's a scene in the movie that you, I think there's one more guy left, right, with the gun, and he's, you know, crapping his pants. Where is he? He's kind of shooting wildly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think in the left rear, you hear him growl, like, it's a quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you picked it up, but
yeah,
it's almost like he's going by you, but he lets out a growl.
Right.
And it's, you know,
I think,
and that's, you know, right after that, he ends the guy, but.
Right.
But there, so cool the way they put that in there.
There's a lot of that in that movie where they do a lot of sounds off screen to tell you something's coming in. And it's so good. There's so much in that movie from as far as, and that's what I said when it came out. I'm like, why I wanted to have Ralph on too about it, because I was so excited for it, because it's such a great home theater experience.
Yeah.
The movie is obviously not as good as the Batman, but I would.
Well, like you said before, I mean, I kind of found myself wanting more in this one.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to end. Well, you know what I mean?
That's what the
biggest, as bad as everybody said it was, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, most of the negative reviews were, it wasn't a long enough story. I needed more information, right?
Yeah.
They wanted more, you know, breakdown of what's going on here. Why was his friend
more of an origin story?
Yeah. More, a little bit more detail into what's going on there. So, you know, it when a movie, when the biggest issue with the movie is they wanted more movie, it must be a pretty entertaining
movie. Yeah. It got a bad rap.
Yeah. So, but yeah. All right. How we doing, Mike? Is that we
good? We're doing good. Yeah. I got through maybe half of my notes, but we'll save that for another time, I guess.
There we go. Well, all right. Let me ask you this, because how much did we talk of that's off notes? Because people say,
we did pretty good.
Yeah.
We did pretty good.
So people ask me that all the time. They're like, "Do I need to do notes? Should I bring them? What do you want to talk about?" I'm like, "It's all up to you, but don't worry."
Right? No, we covered the important stuff.
You covered the important stuff. We went off topic. Yeah. We got to you know, it's like, because like that's what's fun. I mean, we opened up talking Bruins.
I mean, I was actually last couple of days. I'm thinking, oh man, I hope I don't screw this up.
You can't. You can't.
And then I'm thinking to myself, no, you're just talking.
Yep.
You know,
yeah, just
no pressure.
I understand. I understand.
Yeah. It's,
I mean, I've been nervous. I get nervous. It happens, but it's so much.
It's natural.
Once you're into it, that you look back and go,
yeah,
I was nervous. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
Yeah, no, this was, enjoyed it.
Good time. So,
so things I'm looking forward to, I don't know. I guess I'll have to listen to Friday's show. to find out what's coming up and all that. But I'll be tuning in no matter what.
Thanks, Mike. I really, really appreciate it. I love doing these Tuesday shows. I absolutely.
Well, I just like the passion you have. Like I said, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, is it just me? You know what I mean? Who enjoys this stuff? But and then you put it out the way you put it out, and it's like, yeah, I'm on board for this. You know, because I love the community. You know,
yeah, it is. It's a great community, and I love. I always say to people, like, I love the way you put it out, like. It makes me feel like I can do it, because if he could sound so stupid, then I'm not that bad.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's fun. It's so much fun. And the reason, like you just said, it's like, we're all out there going, am I the only one that does this? Cause everybody I talk to, like I say, their eyes glaze over. So
yeah,
it's just great to come together.
Couldn't care less.
Yeah. They can't, they don't care. That's what Disney is. That's what all these companies are dealing with. Imagine, I mean, we're just trying to talk home theater. Imagine trying to run a business, trying to sell this stuff, and how difficult that must be for them. And that's why I appreciate that stuff so much. I appreciate companies for trying to do stuff like what happened with Oro 3D and stuff. It's like, who really cares about Dolby and DTS and Oro 3D and for a small company to struggle and try to do what they do? And any of these companies, any of these smaller, all these receiver companies.
Yeah, it's a tough market. Yeah.
That's the thing, is there are enough of us to support all that. That's what's encouraging to me. It's just harder to find all of us, right? And find people that really want to talk about it. But there must be enough of us out there to support all of this stuff. It's like, that's how big the world is, buddy. It's like, we're just so spread out, and we just got to find a way to talk about it. So,
yeah, I think it's, definitely growing too. And
yeah, yeah,
you know,
it is. So, but all right, that will do it.
All right. Go enjoy your new toy.
Oh yeah. Back in.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm getting back in. I'm going to watch a second episode of, John brought it up last week or 2 weeks ago. Billy the Kid. Really good.
Oh, right.
Really good.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, I'm going to talk about it.
Is that Netflix?
No, I think it's on Epix. I bought it on the Kaleidoscope, but it is on, I think John watched it on Epix, if I remember right. But we'll talk about that on Friday too, but it is really good. I watched the first episode already and I'm really excited about it. It's one of those shows. Like after I watched the first episode, I'm like, oh, I wish I could watch more, but I got to get to work or whatever. But, really good. So I'm going to go push play on that. What are you pushing play next on, Mike? What are you excited for?
I don't know. I just actually just started watching. I'm a little behind on the Stranger Things, but I'm on episode 4, season 1.
Oh, you're right way behind.
When I'm way behind.
Oh.
Just when they're doing a makeover to the character 11.
Yeah.
So I got to get back on that.
That's going to be a good payoff for you, because the way it goes.
Yeah, that's why I'm watching.
My
family's been telling me, you got to watch it. Yeah. And I haven't been much of a streaming guy, but.
Oh, that's a good one.
That one there. Yeah.
That's a good one. So. All right.
But yeah.
All right.
Well, it was fun.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great week. We'll be back on Friday with King Arthur and a bunch of other stuff. John's already got some other things on his list. I've got a bunch of other things. I'm going to break down the Marantz and how I decided and how I installed and some of my favorite scenes I've watched already. So all that fun stuff coming up Friday. Again, thank you, Mike. Thanks to everybody.
No problem.
Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production, with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.